really been legit, merely an excuse for all the distant friends and celebrity crowd of St. Louis to come say their piece. The real funeral procession, and the first goodbye, had been only a day after their sudden demise, and I had been the only attendee. Not even my friends knew of it. That was the day that I had called Chiron to give them their last ride home, as I had done with Raven at my store last night. The door leading outside opened quietly, and I looked up to see an elderly bull of a man step inside, tugging in a janitorial cart. "You shouldn't be here," I growled. "It's private property." The man looked back at me with an unperturbed smile.
"They've been here more times than you, laddie."
His Scottish brogue was thick.
"I kept the place clean for your father going on 40 years now. I guess I'll work for you now."
He continued pushing the cart inside, the 8,000-pound door closing behind him with a dull thud. Soundproof walls. Yet another addition from my parents. Maybe they hadn't wanted to disturb the rest of the cemetery with their afterlife parties once they passed on. Courteous of them, really.
"Well, if you work for me now, then get out." "Not in my contract, Master Temple."
He began mopping up the spotless floor.
"Cantankerous old bastard,"
I grumbled under my breath.
"Aye, Master Temple, that I am. You have a mouth like your father."
I blinked over at him, but he was engrossed in his work, so I let him be. He obviously had the code to get inside the mausoleum, so I trusted his story. I resumed my study of my parents. I thought of their deaths and the lack of evidence the police had obtained from both the scene and the morgue. The facts flit through my mind like a speed reader on crack, but I came to no new conclusions. If Raven had been telling the truth, why had the dragons wanted them dead? Apparently my parents had made some big league enemies. A hand brushed my shoulder, and I jumped, realizing that I had dozed off.
"Better clean yourself up, Master Temple."
He dropped a silk kerchief into my lap, crimson lines showing through some of the thin material.
"Never let him see you sweat."
I stared down at it, listening to the cart shuffle away behind me. I slowly unfolded the cloth. "A larger game is afoot. Beware of the coming eclipse, my son." I stood in a rush, thrusting a finger out at the old man to halt him in a tight cocoon of air as he neared the door. My magic wrapped around him like a straitjacket. One foot lifted off the ground as if I had stopped time.
"What's the meaning of this, old man?"
The janitor stared back from his invisible prison.
"The name's Mallory, Master Temple, not old man. I found that next to your father before the police arrived. You haven't been answering your phone, so I decided to meet you in an old-fashioned way. Didn't want the bobbies to find it. Awkward questions and such, no doubt."
Bobbies was an English term for policemen. Without preamble, the janitor rolled his shoulders, and my spell simply evaporated as if it had never existed. He continued tugging the car through the heavy doors and then disappeared outside, the door thudding closed behind him. I remained frozen, unable to even wonder how the senior citizen had so easily disarmed my magic. My gaze shifted from the door to the kerchief, and then to my parents' tombstone. The message had been written in crimson ink. No, not ink. Blood. Then I was moving. I bolted outside, ready to interrogate Mallory further, but when I got there, he was simply gone. His cart sat just outside the door, but of him, there was no sign. I saw the cab I had called earlier idling just outside, waiting patiently. After a few seconds of bewilderment, I decided to lock up the mausoleum via the electronic keypad and angrily climbed inside the vehicle. "Did you see an old man leave the building a minute ago?" I growled in response to his jovial greeting.
"Just you, sir," he answered with a frown.
I looked back. The cart was gone. What the hell?
"Never mind. Plato's Cave in Solard."
I calculated in my head. 7.5 miles. "Get me there in 8 minutes. He nodded eagerly as I flashed a $50 bill at him. I leaned back into the worn leather seats, satisfied by the adrenaline-inducing Formula One driving abilities of the cabbie.
I closed my eyes with a sigh, thinking. I now knew the reason for the odd premortem gash on his arm. What had been so important that my father had wanted to leave a message in his own blood? And what did that have to do with the upcoming solar eclipse in 3 days? Wait, 2 days now. I hadn't even remembered the big event until the message on the kerchief. It just hadn't seemed important. There was a big convention of astronomers in town awaiting that very spectacle, but I'd be damned if I knew how it was connected to my parents' deaths. Something nagged at me, but I was too exhausted to worry about it. I began preparing a plan to acquire, or at least look into, the book that Raven had wanted me to find. Not knowing what it was about or why it was so important, I figured that finding it might at least protect some of my fellow bookstore owners around town. Perhaps I could barter with one of the dragon sisters she mentioned. Either way, it was better to have it in my possession than remaining an unknown. I spoke a quick reminder into my iPhone, commanding the feminine intelligence queen to transfer it to my calendar in case I forgot later. I was meeting up with Gunnar in an hour to discuss the information he had dug up on Raven and her vague hints. He also had all the information on the latest bookstore attacks. Maybe if we kicked up enough dust, we could find a trail. The taxi screeched to a halt in front of my bookstore. I glanced down at my phone. 7 minutes. I threw him the bill and climbed out. He tipped an imaginary hat at me and, much more responsibly this time, pulled out into the street, adhering to the legal laws set aside by the grand city of St. Louis. Chapter 10. My phone vibrated before I had taken 2 steps. Temple, I answered.
Hey,
Gunner replied, sounding grouchier than earlier.
My car died today.
That brought a brief grin to my face. I know I was there.
No, it really died. It's going to cost twice what it's worth to fix it, so I will be a public transport kind of guy for a while.
Well, at least there's tons of babes on the public bus.
Not in this town. New York, maybe, but not St. Louis.
I tried not to laugh. Still want me to swing by? I answered instead.
Yes. I've got everything together now. You sure you want in on this?
He sounded guarded. Someone tried to hurt us last night? I changed what I had been about to say. Police were kind of nitpicky about overhearing unreported murders, even if it was self-defense. Pretty sure I don't have much of a choice. I hadn't told him about the dragon hunters at the Bellefontaine Cemetery, nor the kerchief for Mallory. It would have to wait. With newfound resolve, I mumbled a confirmation. As much as I would like to catch a flight to Cabo, there's no getting out of it for me. I found out some information that might help us a bit.
Maybe you should get out of town. The cops are already watching you.
I shook my head firmly. I'm not running away from this.
All right,
he sighed.
See you in an hour, then.
I clicked the phone off and shoved it in my pocket. I placed a hand on the heavy door to my shop and strode inside. Standing there, for a moment, I let the building's heat wash over me. Plato's Cave was doing a brisk business for a Friday, despite the new renovations due to Raven's visit last night. A few workers milled around the broken window leading to the street, the sound of hammers striking nails filling the air. A stunning, tall young blonde hung near the register. Her Got Jesus tee stretched much too tightly over her breasts. A cartoon depiction of our Savior was waving a thumbs up in the most inappropriate of places, but the fabric was long enough to remain decent. Barely. Her name was Indiana Ripley. Her eyes reminded me of glacial chips of ice, almost a neon blue. She was my second in command at the shop, my store manager, and was privy to more classified information than the other employees. Hey, Indy. What's happening? She had started as a simple part-timer, but had rapidly forsaken using her degree when confronted with some of the darker clients I sometimes entertained. Her skills at running a tight ship had proven necessary. She was smooth sailing, where others would blanch.
Not a whole lot, Captain, other than the remodel.
She added with a curious brow. I nodded back. Game night tonight? She scanned a paper before her.
Gods of Chaos 4, if I'm not mistaken.
You're never mistaken, Indy, I answered, rolling my eyes. She beamed up at me, dancing up a bit on her toes, a pleasant jiggle making the cartoon Jesus dance, a quick two-step on her shirt.
We got the store cleaned up after you left for...
Her face grew tight.
Need a drink? I'm on break in 5.
She offered, knowing I had been through a tough ordeal today. I'm fine, Indy, but thanks. But all I really wanted to do was succumb to her offer. I had crushed on her for years, but never made that final leap to show her my true feelings, fearing the nuclear fallout if things went south.
Okay.
Her eyes were full of doubt.
I just want you to know that you aren't alone. If you need a shoulder to lean on, don't forget about us little people.
She said with a friendly grin. Eye candy for sure, but she was a trusted friend, and extremely intelligent. Her IQ had been clocked at 187 on 3 separate tests, well above genius level. Harmless flirting had been a part of our relationship since we had met so many years ago, and it had never crossed the line into anything more. I was protective of her, and she of me, but I still found myself wondering if there could be more.
Thanks, but I'm fine. Maybe next week I'll be ready to talk about it. You know where to find me, Captain.
She was also the only employee who didn't always refer to me as Master Temple. I leaned over the counter, whispering conspiratorially.
Any particular guests I need to know about?
She glanced about, making sure no customers were near.
Nope. We're all prepared for the worst, though.
She discreetly slid open a drawer by her long, pale thigh, revealing an empty lock safe, PBS-001, biometric fingerprint pistol case. Every employee had one, and the necessary paperwork for concealment, happily paid for by yours truly. Even with rubber bullets, the guns could impact a world of deterrence. Noticing that Indy wore a tight black pencil skirt, I tried not to imagine where she had hidden her weapon. She smiled sweetly up at me, as if sensing my thoughts. I leaned back and nodded. I just need to step up to my office for a sec, then I'm off again. You mind holding down the fort tonight? I'm not sure where I will be, but my plate is kind of full right now. She glanced at the schedule, feigning a frown.
Well, I'll have to cancel my dinner plans, but if my employer doesn't mind compensating me for it, I don't mind. My date is kind of a douche anyway.
You debutante, I laughed. You know I'm good for it. Rain check for next week, and I'll take you out for lunch so you can hear all the boring details. She nodded.
Only if it's somewhere good.
Your pick. She clapped her hands, and I had to force myself to walk away rather than study the reaction of her anatomy. I climbed the stairs to my loft, unlocked the door, and stepped inside, expecting a class 5 cluster fuck of a mess, but I was wrong. I had woken up late this morning, and momentarily turned into a tornado while looking for my suit. A smile split my cheeks, and I strode over to the window. Indy was glancing up at me. I mimed a worshipful pose, recognizing her deft hand at cleaning up for me. She deserved a raise. Her smile grew wider as she waved back up at me, and then she returned to her duties. I changed quickly, and then scanned my desk for Peter's book request. Spotting the parchment, I shoved it into my jeans pocket, threw on a comfy tee and a jacket, snatched up my Fendi satchel full of magical goodies, including the Sig Sauer X5 pistol Gunner had gifted me, and locked up behind me. Curious, I approached Indy again. Any reason I never got the message from Peter earlier in the week? I waved the note at her. She frowned, unknowing.
Peter said he left it with Jesse.
Her eyes instantly became guilty.
He seemed like a good guy when I hired him. He's an odd duck, but he's still trying to learn the particulars for working for you. Want me to talk to him?
Her face was set in a frown, no doubt anxious to rectify the situation with a DEFCON 1 approach. And you wonder why I was hesitant to risk our friendship for a chance at romance.
No worries. Just see that it doesn't happen again.
I have full faith in you, Indy. If you thought he was worth hiring, then I trust you. My voice grew darker as I picked up a pirate accent.
No need to make him walk the plank. Yet.
She grinned back, nodding once.
Aye, aye, Captain.
She bellowed loudly. From around the store, all my employees dropped what they were doing to salute in my direction, a chorus of shouts that startled the customers.
Aye, aye, Captain.
I saluted back. See you later in... She held up a finger, commanding my obedience. I frowned, but waited. As slowly and deliciously as an exotic dancer, she raised an arm from behind the counter, dangling a white paper sack like the dancer would dangle a pair of panties. Her face glowed with pride. You are an angel, I said, snatching up the bag of freshly brewed colada. She nodded before turning to a nearby customer, engaging them with her full attention. Raise for Indy. Check. I headed out to my car that was parked in front of the store. It had cost quite a bit to get the city to allow me to purchase the space as a permanent spot, but it was definitely worth it. After all, like my father always said, money doesn't spend itself. I gunned the engine with a throaty roar and sped off towards Gunner's office. Time for answers, I told myself.
Chapter 11.
Any way you can tighten up the pixels? I asked, squinting.
It looks like an etch-a-sketch
by a blind amputee. I studied the screen with cerebral palsy.
If you would just give me a damn second, Gunner snapped. We aren't all billionaires who can afford a year's salary on a stupid Apple desktop. The neighbor's call only came in 5 minutes ago, and I tapped into the street cam 3 minutes ago.
I waited, sipping a shot of the still steaming colada that Indy had given me. Dusk had begun to descend upon the city as I reached Gunner's office. Being in one of the higher levels of the FBI building, I had a pleasant view of the city from my chair. Gunner's fingers shot toward me, imploring, as he began to take a meditative sip. With a sigh, I poured him a shot of his latest addiction. He downed it, never moving his eyes from the screen. I had created a monster. As if fueled by the caffeine, his fingers flew across the keyboard of the desktop in a blur. Moments later, the picture on the digital screen cleared, revealing a recognizable image this time. He clicked play. A female in a long trench coat entered a downtown bookstore. Nothing scary about that. Then Gunner jumped ahead 10 minutes. The same woman walked out. The street slightly darker now. She dipped into an uninhabited alley and dropped her trench coat. As the garment fluttered to the ground, there was a flash of pale nudity, and then a long, red tail knocked over a trash can before disappearing into the shadows. Gunner was watching me.
Damn! Dragons again. Must be one of Raven's sisters.
What, like, real dragons?
He asked. Of course, real dragons, I grumbled, mimicking the dragon hunter, Tomas, I had met at the cemetery. I explained his description of the shape-shifting dragons to Gunner. You were telling me that this isn't the FBI's first sighting? Gunner shook his head, leveling me with angry eyes.
Third, one bookstore owner died of hypothermia, but the thermostat in his store was set at 73 degrees. The other was found covered in infectious blisters, oozing pus and bacteria. But he had been to the doctor a few days prior and had walked away with an impeccable physical report. Neither of them makes any sense. Then this. But at least this one is still alive.
It's my first case in charge of the new team I was telling you about last night, and I still wouldn't even know what we were dealing with if you hadn't just told me, which is the whole point of the new team.
He glanced around warily.
A team that is more capable of dealing with our kind of stuff.
We need to go check this out, now. I stood, curious about the odd particulars of the other deceased victims. Gunner nodded.
All right. I'll call my squad to swing by after we check it out. I kind of want you off the books for now,
he added sheepishly.
But tell me what else you found out, and how.
On the way, I answered. Gunner snatched up a coat the size of a tarp, locking his computer and darting out the door behind me.
We'll take my car,
Gunner scowled. He opened his mouth to ask another question, but I held up a finger, motioning to all the agents swarming around us. He clamped shut. Unhappy, but understanding. The elevator door whisked open before me, and Gunner's boss, special agent in charge, Roger Reinhardt, stepped out. He was also a large man,
full of authority. He wore short-cropped dark hair, looking every inch the politician, but I knew he was good at his job. He knew how to play the bureaucratic games with the big boys. His eyes widened at the sight of me, quickly searching for my visitor's badge. I waved it at him, so he wouldn't have a heart attack.
"Nathan Temple, my deepest condolences," he offered sincerely.
I nodded back, wordlessly stepping past him into the elevator. He turned to Gunner.
"Any progress on the attacks, Agent Randolph?" "Working on a lead now."
Reinhardt looked dubious, glancing at me.
"He's under my protection," Gunner continued. "His shop was broken into last night, just like the others, but the perp escaped. He might be able to identify the assailant."
Reinhardt still looked unconvinced, but finally nodded.
"Have you found any special consultants yet?"
Gunner shook his head. Interesting. It meant that Reinhardt didn't know that I was a special consultant, which also meant that my secret alter ego as a wizard was still safe. Goody.
"I'm taking a big risk with your task force, Agent Randolph. Consulting with alleged gifted individuals to help us catch gifted criminals still sounds like some bad Hollywood movie, but I have to admit that things are getting weirder out there."
He grimaced at that, as if it left a sour taste in his mouth. I tried to keep my face blankly innocent and aloof.
"It still feels like making a deal with the devil. Don't make me look like a fool."
He studied me curiously for a few seconds, sizing me up, and then he strode away. Gunner joined me in the elevator as I hit the lobby button. Music played in the tiny steel box as we descended, not speaking. It was a huge deal for Gunner to lie about the Raven escaping, even though the cause was worth it. It was also worthy of note to hear that Agent Reinhardt assumed that Gunner was simply consulting with other freaks, and not that Gunner was one of those freaks himself.
"Consulting, eh?" I offered.
Gunner glanced at me, eyes tight.
"It's the only way. For now.
We need a home run. Neither the local law enforcement or the FBI can handle this type of thing. That's why Reinhardt is allowing me to do this. He knows, even if he won't admit it, that the crimes in the city are growing beyond his scope of understanding. He saw one of the other videos. I thought he was going to faint when he saw the tale."
"Well, then, time to roll the dice." Gunner grunted as the doors chimed open. Exiting the secure building, we hopped into my car and rode downtown. I handed him the kerchief from my pocket on the way, explaining its origins. He studied it critically, even sniffing it. "I guess it's a wolf thing.
Mind if I run some tests on it?"
I shook my head, paying attention to the road in order to bottle away the pain of parting with my father's kerchief.
"The solar eclipse. Raven mentioned that, too. Any idea what it means?"
I shook my head again.
"And you say you've never seen this old man before the funeral?"
"No, but he knew some pretty heavy magic. My power slid off him like rain, and then he simply walked out. His appearance could have just been a cover, but he obviously has access to Temple Industries, and my parents hand-selected each and every employee. He also knew the code to the mausoleum. As far as I know, only three people knew that code, and two of them are now dead."
"Could he be one of the dragons?"
The word was tough for him to say aloud.
"I don't think so.
He gave me a lead. I'm pretty sure that's out of countenance with the evil bad guy Bible." Another thought hit me.
"And he didn't have horizontal pupils."
Snow was still piled up on the street banks from the night before.
"I almost forgot about that. Creepy."
I nodded, glancing over at my friend. He was practically hugging the dash of the small sports car with his massive bulk. Her magic matched the color of her irises, and even her hand, when it started to change into that nasty manicure job that tried to slice your throat, at least that's what caught the dragon hunter's attention. Gunner sputtered.
"What? Dragon hunter?"
he demanded.
"Oh, yeah. I did my best to look apologetic.
At the funeral, I met a guy when I was having a smoke. He told me to watch out. Said I was in danger. Apparently something big is going down soon, and him and his crew are hunting a particular dragon in town. A man. He said he was keeping tabs on the bookstores, so I'm sure we'll run into them again." Gunner opened his mouth to say more.
"We're here,"
I interrupted, changing the topic as I pointed at the deserted shop doors. I pulled my car into a parking space and we climbed out. Gunnar was staring at the store, so I studied his silhouette against a street lamp. He looked like an ancient Valkyrie, his Norse heritage obvious. Raising my gaze, I scanned the nearby buildings, appreciating the beauty of the ancient little city. The courthouse loomed over us, powerful, resolute, and regal, her white climbing columns and vast marble facade intimidating and imposing. My gaze flicked over the top of the courthouse directly across the street from the bookstore, and I immediately tensed. "Gunner," I warned. He followed my gaze in time to see a long red tail swinging gently in a gust of wind between two gargoyle statues. He slowly turned to me, eyes surprised. "Well, that was easy. Want to go have a chat with her?" An expensive car pulled up behind mine, squeezing into the last parking space on the street amidst a blare of angry honking as they cut someone off. The driver remained inside, studying a map. I nodded to Gunner. "Have you brushed up on any Dale Carnegie lately?" Gunner grunted, smiling as he brushed his tattoo subconsciously.
"How to win friends and influence people. Yep."
I decided to leave my bag of tricks in the car, feeling confident in my power. Magic was fueled by emotion, and I had plenty of that. Tools helped wizards focus their powers, but I had enough power and control that I rarely needed to focus for doing things. Unless I was trying something completely new. But I wasn't planning on experimenting tonight. Plus, I had a werewolf to back me up. Besides, Peter had killed the first dragon with a frozen liquor bottle, and he was untrained. I would rely on sheer power, because I was fast and efficient at destroying things when I needed to. The only other thing I trusted to use was the handy-dandy pistol that I had stowed in the glove compartment. But heading into a federal courthouse with a gun seemed idiotic. There was nothing discreet about the weapon. Gunner carried a small backpack with a change of clothes inside in case he needed to shift into his werewolf form. We crossed the street and headed inside the beautiful stonework courthouse. The 5-story pillars held up the roof, reminding me of the Greek Parthenon. The moving tail was no longer visible, but I knew it was up there amidst the stone gargoyles that guarded the roof's perimeter. Gunner had to wave his badge several times as security questioned our entrance, but we were finally admitted. They waved us on, turning back to their duties. We took the stairs two at a time, swift, but not fast enough to alarm anyone we might run into, feet slapping the cold marble as we continued up to the roof. We didn't encounter anyone else in this late hour, but kept our eyes to the shadows just in case. What if the dragon was back in human form? I decided to pay very close attention to the eyes of any person who came near me, any horizontal pupils, and I would have to neutralize them. And why had she remained so close to the scene of her break-in? The emergency call from the neighbor had informed Gunner that the owner was alive, but scared shitless. Understandably so. Perhaps the dragon was waiting on the storekeeper, seeing if he went out in search of her request. That would mean that he had offered up some information to her that had somehow spared his life. Interesting. I'd have to talk to him about it if we survived our own encounter with the dragon. We climbed to the top floor of the building, and looking both ways, chose a direction in search of a roof exit. Windows lined the wall, allowing a splendid view of the city below. Seeing no one around, I spoke, my heels striking the marble with each step. Tap, tap, tap. "So tell me more about this strike force you're putting together. I can't imagine many freaks are in the bureau, so how much good could it do?" Freaks were how the few unenlightened individuals, like the cops, referred to us. No one had yet confirmed officially that we existed, but plenty of civilians already knew or at least had a very good suspicion. Crimes were simply becoming too unexplainable, with the new advanced technologies revealing truths that had historically been hidden under reams of paperwork. A Kentucky senator was even demanding that all freaks should furthermore be termed wizards, since it had to be our fault that they all existed in the first place. Idiots. Gunner looked at me heavily, saying nothing. "Wait, you said hush-hush. Do you even have any jurisdictional lines? Are they just going to put up flyers in every police station in the country, seeing if any freaks are stupid enough to move to the buckle of the Bible Belt?" Gunner scoffed.
"Of course there are lines. Like I told you, this is just a test run. Reinhardt knows weird stuff keeps happening, and that more often than not,
We remain aloof to the criminals and their capture. This is merely a beta testing of an idea I whispered to him. He's a regular, but a damn good agent. He has no idea what he was really allowing me to do, what I was really asking him. So for now, I basically just have a wider line than the other agents. Instead of a razor blade, I'm dancing on a steak knife.
I pondered that. Crime was getting nastier each year, and while most of it was the normal run-of-the-muck kind of crime, some of it did need a firmer hand. Guns were fine, but sometimes not enough, and all too often red tape plugged up said guns.
Can't hurt, I guess. Any recruits yet? Or just consultants?
I mocked, scanning the glass walls around us for a roof exit. Gunner said nothing, so I stopped and glanced back. Tap, tap, tap. The sound of heels striking the ground continued. He pointed a finger at me, face ashen.
Me?
I stared back dumbfounded. Oh, no way. I'm not even a cop. I don't know diddly about all the minutiae that took you years to learn. I'm a terrible recruit. Another thought struck me. And I don't even want to join. I've got enough on my plate, thank you very much. Gunner continued staring, but I realized he wasn't pointing at me. He was pointing behind me. Then he abruptly shifted into his underdog underwear-clad werewolf form, clothes exploding to shreds. I had time to hope that it wasn't the same pair of underwear from the night before. Tap, tap, tap. The noise continued, and this time I realized it sounded quite different from our heels striking marble. It sounded like something tapping on glass. I turned and found myself facing a massive, grinning red dragon, snorting fog onto the cool glass from her scaly visage outside. Tap, tap, tap. A giant talon let out a staccato drumbeat. I was momentarily reminded of a sadistic child tapping on a glass fish tank. Then the glass exploded inwards, and a massive arm wrapped around my waist, tugging me out onto the windy rooftop.
Ack!
I yelled as the grip squeezed the air from my lungs. Muscles bunched around me as the world tossed and turned. I heard Gunner howl, a piercing lament, but we were moving fast, and between being tossed about like the victim of a drunken operator controlling a Ferris wheel and not being able to breathe, I felt positively unpleasant, which pissed me off. Which is when I get a tad reckless. Everything halted, and I abruptly noticed a sad statue on the roof from inches away, his face pitting my dilemma. Then my body was hoisted out over the city streets 5 stories below, the grip loosening enough for me to breathe. Cars flashed by beneath me, oblivious of my predicament.
Now that we're alone, I propose we have a little chat,
a woman's voice spoke. I lifted my head to stare straight into the dragon's fiery red horizontal pupils, ignoring the blood pounding in my skull. I gathered my will, ready to unleash hell.
Ha ha ha!
The blood-red dragon's voice cooed as she released one of the talons holding me up above St. Louis's beautifully paved streets. My body dropped an inch, and I squawked in alarm.
I just wanted to have a few words with you about a family book.
Her voice was that of a phone sex operator, full of empty promises that one couldn't help but buy.
Oh, and also about my sister, since she never came home last night.
Another talon let loose, dropping my upper torso entirely, leaving me to hang upside down by my knees. I laughed, fighting my panic.
Your sister won't be coming home anytime soon.
She cocked her head quizzically.
Start talking. Now, wizard.
My pack of cigarettes fell out of my pocket, sailing down into the night. And down, and down, and down. I swiveled, quite composed, and pointed an angry finger at her.
That was a new pack, bitch.
More glass burst outward from atop the roof, out of my immediate sight. Her eyes swiveled towards the noise with a hiss and tongue of flame. I am not above sucker punches. A rumble of power began to build at her throat as she prepared a counterattack at the noise. I summed up my will, calling on the wind this high up, and bulldozed the sad-faced statue that had shown me a moment of compassion. A cloud of dust and rock exploded out, but a big portion of the statue sailed true. slamming straight into her wide-open mouth as she was ready to let loose her blast. Napalm fire, unable to go anywhere else, splashed all over her crenellated head, bathing her in a sick wash of flames from snout to chest. She shook her head with a roar of pain and surprise.
"Eat that!"
I crowed, still hanging upside down. Then the fire died out from her scales, causing no lasting harm. Blood dripped freely from her scaled lips thanks to my throne statue, one tooth dangling by a thread of her gums before it, too, fell to the roof like the drops of blood. The roof around her flared with liquid fire. I heard a shout, but not Gunner's voice, and then three sizzling blue and black spears sailed through the night towards my captor. She dodged two of them, sending them off down into the nearby park, and hopefully not into a wandering pedestrian, but the third slammed home, tearing a jagged hole in one of her wings and piercing her thigh. Blue sparks sizzled up from the wound, and she roared in pain. She took one shaky step, freeing her wing, and then glared at me.
"It appears that your time is up."
With a smile, she let go of my leg, and I fell. Fast. I realized I was going to become a nuisance to the street sweeper on the morning shift. The dragon launched off the roof with a snap of wings, sailing away into the night sky. Gunner, in his giant white-haired werewolf form, stared down at me from the roof, jaws stretched wide, as if howling. But the wind whistled in my ears as I dropped, so I couldn't distinguish his familiar roar. And then I spotted a freaking black boomerang racing towards my face from another building across the street. My scream was in no way similar to that of a frightened little girl. The black boomerang unfolded into a trio of interconnected rubber balls attached to a net of rope. Apparently, Spider-Man was watching over my fair city. The web slammed into me, and then the weighted ball swung around and around my torso until finally hammering into different sections of my body like a boxer working a heavy bag. One was about a hair away from permanently ruining my chances at continuing my family tree. And luckily, none hit me in the face, or I would have officially been Mike Tyson'd. The force of the impact was strong enough to alter my trajectory directly into a window on the side of the building, and then through the goddamn window. The heavy glass didn't impede my entrance in the slightest, sending a tinkling shower of shards before me into what seemed like a plush office. I bounced off a very sturdy bookshelf, and then slid face first onto a long, wide wooden desk, my face efficiently clearing everything off the top of its surface. A stapler, a jar of pens, a book, a pile of papers, a keyboard, a monitor, and at the very end of the desk sat a steaming mug of coffee. I squinted my eyes shut in anticipation, trying to break with my feet, but they were all tangled up in a damn web. Again, I inform you that the impending shriek sounded in no way similar to that of a frightened little girl. I slid to a halt, my nose brushing the scalding mug, but it didn't spill. I tried to steady my breathing, and cautiously peeled open the only eye not squeezed shut from the web, staring at the room's only occupant. A man had wisely scooted back from the desk. He reminded me of Father Time, older than old. But he was apparently still spry enough to dodge a sailing web-encased wizard who happened to burst through his fourth-floor office window. He glanced down at me, long, heavy caterpillar eyebrows, frowning with disapproval. A heavy authority was contained within his stare. Then I noticed his getup. A thin black robe settled around his shoulders, and I noticed a wooden gavel on a bookshelf behind him. I gulped. "Your Honor?" I offered. The rope web pressed my nose flat against my face, and another lifted my mouth into what would pass for a world-record hair lip. Without a word, he reached over my face, carefully plucked up his coffee, and stepped out of the room. He had a damn good poker face, I thought to myself as I heard pounding feet racing towards me from just outside the open door. Then a swarm of security guards burst into the room, guns leveled in my general direction, as if anticipating a ninja to disappear into a cloud of smoke and throwing stars. The lead guard blinked, and then suppressed a grin as he tucked his gun away.
"I don't think he's an immediate threat."
I squirmed angrily, hoping to unhook one of the balls on the web, but I merely succeeded in slipping off the desk to fall straight onto my back on the hardwood floor. Pain flashed in my side as the wind was knocked out of me.
son of a bitch.
I wheezed through the web. Chapter 12. It didn't take long for Gunnar to sort out the mess and get me out of handcuffs. That's 2 times in 24 hours. Impressive, right? Gunnar had changed into his spare clothes, and no one seemed to notice. At first, Justice Simpson hadn't been very pleased with my interruption, but after checking my wallet for identification, he had burst out laughing so hard that I actually started to blush. His last comment still aggravated me as we stepped outside, past another set of chuckling guards. I flipped them off. Pricks, I muttered, rubbing at the rope burns on my neck. They laughed harder. Gunnar glanced over at me, amused.
He did say that you could drop by any time. Quite courteous of him, given the situation.
I take it you're walking back to the office? Gunnar grumbled back.
Thought you might like a souvenir.
He offered me one of the dragon's teeth that I had knocked out. It was almost as long as my pinky.
Nifty.
I smiled back, pocketing it. A beautiful blonde woman in a tracksuit was walking across the street from us, and I swiped back my shaggy hair for a semblance of dignity. Gunnar followed my gaze, nodding his agreed approval. Her hair was cut short along her jaw, so that the bangs formed wicked points near her chin, layered perfectly around her thin, oval face. She grinned at my obvious interest, and I winked back. She giggled, and began to change directions towards us, limping slightly, as if she had sprained her ankle while running.
God, Kroll's giggling. What a delicious sound. That's a nice cherry Danish,
I said for Gunnar's ears only. Gunnar stared at me, askance.
Do you always refer to women as dessert dishes?
I pondered that as we climbed into my vintage car. We waited for the jogger to approach us, her dazzling white teeth reeling me in as her long legs brought her closer. She leaned into the window, studying us both.
Got a pen?
She asked in a breathless voice. I silently slipped her one. Her eyes were like almonds, and the smell of clean sweat quickly kicked in my hormones, which had barely survived the Spider-Man-like assault. She furiously jotted down a number on my hand. No name. Her fingers were feverish. Whom do I ask for when I call? I asked with a grin. You'll find that out if I answer, or if you even call. She grinned, and then turned to walk off her twisted ankle.
Gold digger,
Gunnar complained.
But I've got gold. So, it's a win-win,
I answered, grinning.
Money doesn't make you happy,
he recited the well-known adage. I started the car, rubbing the gas into a throaty growl beneath my feet.
Well, it sure as shit doesn't make you sad either, Gunnar.
He rolled his eyes, but couldn't mask his grin as I pulled out into traffic. A few seconds later, the car parked behind us also pulled out. Was it the same car that had parked behind me before we went into the courthouse? Was this what a tale felt like? I was too intrigued to be scared. I mean, I had just survived a joint attack by a wannabe Spider-Man and a red dragon. What danger was a mere regular? I answered Gunner's first question. I guess I just haven't met a girl who classifies as a dinner dish. But that's okay. I adore dessert. Gunnar belted out a laugh.
So, who saved your ass with that net launcher?
Spider-Man? I offered.
Seriously, Nate, there are three possibilities. One, they were trying to catch the dragon and missed horribly. Two, they were trying to catch you for some dark reason. Three, it really was our friendly neighborhood web-slinger saving your pathetic life. In that case, I might have my first recruit, even if he does seem to have poor character judgment.
I grunted my displeasure at this quip. I liked number three best, but I guess you should look into the alternative since Spider-Man's just a comic book character. So who was that other guy on the roof with you? The car was still behind me, but further back. Gunnar looked frustrated.
I'm not sure. He appeared out of nowhere, shot the dragon with the electric spear gun, and then he was gone. Maybe he was one of those dragon hunters.
I nodded. Mind looking into it for me? I have to swing by Chateau Falco. Gunnar arched a brow.
Need backup?
Pretty sure that's one of the safest places in town right now. I'll call you after. I pulled up in front of the FBI building, and he opened the door.
My team should be finished with the bookstore in a short while, so I'll let you know what we found out later. See you soon, Temple. And watch your ass.
The tale continued on past me. I was simply reading too much into things. That's what I have for you, sweetie. I winked. He shook his head and slammed the door with more force than was necessary. I continued on, still on schedule, to meet Miss Belmont at Chateau Falco.
Chapter 13.
I waited outside the gated fortress of Chateau Falco. A tall, thick brick and rebar-enforced wall surrounded the grounds, and an arcane Damascus steel-forged gate impeded my path. A life-size nude statue stood atop the wall to either side of the gate, a man and a woman, armed for battle. It had been rumored that the cremated remains of our first ancestors to settle here had been used for the mortar. Before I could beep in on the intercom, a familiar voice emanated from the speaker.
"Greetings, Master Temple. Your fortress awaits. Lowering the bridge now."
The gate began to slowly swing inward.
"We live in the 21st century, Dean. People don't have bridges. They have gates."
He ignored me.
"Bridge lowered, Master Temple. You could safely cross the moat now."
Then he signed off. I sighed, shifting into gear and driving up the mile-long cobbled drive, passing lush gardens on either side of me. Well, lush for this time of the year anyway. After a few minutes of driving, Dean, the Temple family's chief of security and butler, didn't appreciate speeding, and was known to let the air out of the tires if one disobeyed. Even if said one was now the current Master Temple, I pulled into the wide circular drive leading up to the courtyard, parked, and left the keys inside. I didn't see any other cars, and wondered why for a moment, but then recognized Dean's skilled hand as I spotted tire tracks leading to a large remodeled stable. He had already parked the guests, whomever they may be, cars in the stable in case of more snow or rain. Chances were that the cars were also being detailed by one of the family employees while inside. I shook my head warily. I didn't belong in this type of atmosphere, which is why I had left several years ago. The fountain in the center of the drive was off this time of year, but the stonework statues in the center were still spectacular. I leaned back, taking in the looming four-story structure before me. Built over 200 years ago, each generation had added onto it, but none dared stray from the original colonial design. The old pile now stretched close to 17,000 square feet, containing two wings, two large libraries, 20 bedrooms, three kitchens, a theater room, a glass greenhouse attached to the side, and even a mediocre observatory. I sighed, fingering the quickly made leather thong that now held the red dragon's tooth around my neck. It was so sharp that it scratched my chest a bit, but it was a badge of honor in my eyes. A warning. I walked up to the massive front door with the temple coat of arms emblazoned in the wood. A pinprick light studied me from the corner in the sheltered porte-cochere, blinking red with a motion detector. Beside it, a screen came to life to reveal Dean studying me critically.
"Ah, Master Temple, please come in. Follow the guiding lights to come entertain your guests in the master's study. All are here, as the master has requested."
I sighed, having requested no such thing. It was as I had feared. Whether I wanted it or not, I was the new Master Temple and not just a name. The family reputation was like royalty, inescapable. I began to take a step.
"Ah, please remove your shoes, Master Temple."
Then he signed off. Dean remotely unlocked the door before me, and I stepped into the dim house, a nostalgic grin on my face. Even after years of hiding from this place, it seemed we picked up right where we had left off. It was comforting.
And disturbing. I kicked off my shoes, and finding no others nearby, I placed mine just inside the door, and followed the trail of dim LED lighting embedded into the marble floors, escorted by the technology of the house, as it led me down one hallway, and then another, and on, wondering all the while who else might be here waiting to speak with me. Trudging on, I decided that my parents should have bought an electric golf cart for inside the house. Since it was now mine, perhaps I would act on the idea.
I pass rooms of cabinets filled with odd bits and ends from archaeological digs, or acquired through auctions or inheritance from past family members. The rooms I passed held a timeless quality, even amidst cutting-edge technology. But I didn't let my guard down. The beauty of the house was one of its many defenses. A sleight of hand. If one looked close enough, one would notice that some of the paintings always managed to be staring at the people in the room, no matter where they were positioned. And I'm not talking about the paranoia one gets when they feel like the pictures are watching them. I mean that they might literally be watching you. I shivered, moving on. Despite the chill outside, the floors held thermal-controlled piping beneath the marble tile, heating the stone to a comfortable temperature underneath my socks. It's nice what money can buy. Reaching a large stairway, I ascended, following the lights and continuing on for another few minutes until I reached my father's old study. I hadn't needed the lights to guide me, but it was a nice comfort, as well as an intimidating show of power for my guests. I took a deep breath before opening the door and stepping inside. The pleasant aromatic whiff of frequent cigar smoke hit me first, and then the heart-wrenching memory of seeing my father behind the now empty desk at the end of the room, smoking his precious Gurkha Black Dragon cigars. One of his five-hand-carved camel-bone chests sat on a corner of his massive desk. Each chest of 100 cigars set my father back $115,000. $500,000 to kill yourself, slowly. Hypocrite I may be, but at least I wasn't as reckless about the cost. A thick glass window covered the entire back wall, but this night it was basking in the soothing glow of many antique lamps. I immediately studied the people in the room, uncharacteristically wary after my recent adventures. Ashley Belmont stood on one side, speaking to an older gentleman who had his back to me. She smiled over his shoulder at me. I waved back. "Miss Belmont, a pleasure." Her smile grew warmer. The man beside her turned, smiling knowingly at me.
"Nasty bit of news about the courthouse this evening. One should be careful when dealing with dangers that might be attracted to blood in the water. But of course, you know this already, laddie."
Mallory grinned, striding over and pumping my hand enthusiastically.
"How did you..."
I began, and then slapped my forehead.
"You were the one tailing me."
"But why?" I was genuinely perplexed. He discreetly pointed a thumb at a long-barreled spear gun leaning against the wall, but flicked his eyes over to his shoulder, reminding me of Miss Belmont's presence.
"Just making sure the Master Temple is safe. Did you think I was only a janitor?"
His grin was infectious. Reassessing the older man, I realized that he was rather stout, with thick, heavy forearms. Coarse, iron-gray hair covered his skin and knuckles, reminding me of an old-school sailor. "An old man for a guardian," I grunted. But he had most likely saved my life tonight. Having seen my magic slide off of him at the mausoleum, I deduced that he was most definitely dangerous, which is a good quality for a guardian.
"Well, thanks, I guess. You could have just told me, though."
"Not nearly so much fun," he answered. "But I do believe that to be a discussion for another night, over a glass of scotch. You have business this night, Master Temple."
He pointed a finger across the room, indicating a sharply dressed man standing beside Dean, Chateau Falco's butler. I walked over with a familiar grin, and bumped knuckles with Dean as he extended his hand for a professional handshake. He had served as our chief of security since I was a child, but vehemently denied all titles except butler. He came from a very different time, when the term butler was a highly respected profession. Dedication, loyalty, honor, and prestige were his lifeblood.
"Pleased to see you again, Master Temple."
He was about chest height, and his eyes seemed to shine like Caribbean ocean water surrounding the black island of his pupils.
"Bad hygiene is not indicative of a respected gentleman, especially the last heir of the renowned temples. Do not disrespect yourself like this again."
I grinned back, shrugging. If I wasn't wearing a suit, I was slumming it in his eyes. "I showered last night, Dean," I argued.
"Then perhaps the finer points of how to properly groom oneself need to be relearned after years of bachelorhood,"
he droned, respectfully, of course. I grinned even further. "I know just the women to teach me. Thank you for the reminder, Dean. I will practice studiously with them. Several times,
to make sure I learn it correctly. Ashley made an embarrassed sound behind me. Dean blushed.
Incorrigible. Completely incorrigible.
I smiled, patting his arm affectionately. He was family. I studied the last sharply dressed man out of the corner of my eye. Would we dance this night? He waited patiently, fighting the urge not to introduce himself and rudely interrupt my reunion with Dean. Years of training came back to me in the blink of an eye. The training of the European courts, the cloak-and-dagger dance of smiles and knives, where winks could mean assassinations, and glares could mean lifelong alliances. The dance had been ingrained into each and every temple child. I turned to him after a heavy silence, face utterly blank, letting him know this was my home, and he was here by my choice, not the other way around. Seeing my obvious attention, he broke first, as was proper.
"Greetings, Master Temple. My name is Turner Locke."
I nodded at him. "A pleasure to make your acquaintance, Mr. Locke. Be welcome in my home." Dean glided closer to the wall, blending in like a piece of furniture, trying not to disturb the master and his guests, but ready to serve in any capacity I required at the drop of a hat. I studied Mr. Locke.
"What firm do you represent?"
He blinked in surprise.
"None, Master Temple. I worked exclusively for your father after our first interaction."
"Then you must be a very adequate lawyer, Mr. Locke. My father wasn't easily impressed." He nodded humbly in answer.
"May I ask how you know my profession?"
"What other profession would deem to speak with me so urgently after my parents' deaths?" I smiled coldly. "Now, what is the purpose of this mysterious meeting I unknowingly called everyone to attend? I abhor unknowns. Here I find myself waiting in a plethora of them." My tone filled the room. Smiles lowered, and Mr. Locke gestured toward a semicircle of chairs before the desk.
"If you could please take a seat, Master Temple. I have pledged to share your parents' last will and testament."
I inwardly groaned. On top of the funeral, this was the nail in the coffin, so to speak. It was so real now. They were dead. I was alone. I mustered my resolve so no one would see my weakness. They each began to take a seat, and I paused, realizing there was not enough chairs. I began walking to the side of the room to pull up another, but Dean hissed for my ears only.
"Master Temple, do not abase yourself so."
He flicked a discreet finger at my father's chair behind the desk. I opened my mouth to object, and Dean revealed a serrated blade in his deft fingers.
"Tires,"
was all he said. No one else had noticed. I smiled and nodded, approaching the chair behind the desk with trepidation and an overwhelming sense of foolishness, like a 9-year-old child putting on his father's shoes. Slowly, I descended into the worn leather, waiting for someone to declare me an impostor. I fought to keep my face blank. The three seated before me grew tense, watching me, as if a rabid lion had been let loose in the room. Dean oozed approval as he glided up a few paces behind me, in full view of the three subjects before his master temple. Jesus, I didn't belong here. Regardless of what Dean thought, I tried to sound like my father.
"Would anyone care for refreshments?"
Each of their eyes cautiously settled on the drinks already sitting on coasters before them, but they didn't speak.
"Ah, of course. Thank you, Dean."
My butler nodded as he set a perfectly weighted glass of scotch in front of me. I leaned back, taking a pleasurable sip, having no fucking clue what I was supposed to be doing. I could dance with the best of them when I knew the game, but my father's game made me look a fool. I felt as if I should know a different language for this. I decided to stop pretending. I didn't want to live in my father's shadow. I would simply be myself. "Well, since I am the only one in the dark here, why don't we just cut straight to the point? You obviously want my permission to do something, or you are expecting me to tell you that I will pick up right where my parents left off. Well, I can quickly dissuade you of any false assumptions. I will not be taking over the company, and you will not use me as a phony symbol of the company to increase shareholder value. I am not my father. I am sure that Miss Belmont is fully capable of running Temple Industries, or she wouldn't have been promoted to her position. By all means, please finish your drinks in peace, and Dean will escort you out as soon as you are ready."
I took a sip of my drink and leaned forward, baring my teeth in a smile. A heavy silence blanketed the room. Dean sighed disapprovingly, but I ignored all of it. Mr. Locke's